You started this thing. You created it from scratch, presumably. So who else better to tell that story than you? But you don't want to be in the sales process either. You don't want to be hammering out cold calls, hopefully. But you might be the character that is the, you know, figurehead for the business that tells those stories in the way that you tell them, that interviews people like you're doing with me and other, I'm sure you interview clients too. That, I think, is an awesome role for the founder.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass.
All right. I am thrilled. Bill is here with us. Bill, we just read off your intro. Incredible background, incredible story. But in your own words, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate you having me on today. I'm looking forward to our discussion. We did a little pre-work and it sounds like we're going to have some fun here today. So the way I introduce myself, I work with business-to-business sales teams, exclusively business-to-business. I work with everybody from the VP of sales all the way to the sales teams, skill building, coaching, accountability, sales strategy, anything that's designed to help them generate more clients and keep more clients and sell bigger ticket deals. So that's my ethos.
Well, I am excited to learn from you today. I've got my notebook open, ready to take some notes. It's interesting. A lot of times we talk to marketers, but I think really good marketers are extremely closely tied to their sales team. I think I've seen that throughout my career. The best marketing teams have been tightly correlated to the best relationship with the sales team. So as part of that, I've been through several sales training motions. Actually, the last company I was at before The Juice, I think we went through a sales training exercise. I mean, it was really good. Everyone felt fired up about it. Everyone was speaking the same language. 6 months later, we still had the same sales problems we had previously. Yep. We went through another different sales training process. So, you know, you and I, like you said, we talked a little bit before this, but you said sales training is not necessarily the solution. It can be a solution, but might not be the solution to your problem. So just speak about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's typically, I get called in by companies, a CEO or a VP of sales will call and say, hey, look, we've got some sales problems. We're not closing a high enough percentage. We're not prospecting enough. My team is kind of lethargic. We're just going through the motions. Would you come in and help me? And there's a saying, I can't remember exactly, but to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I would acquiesce and I would say, okay, well, let's get to work. Let's build some skills. And what I found was that it's rarely a skills problem. It's more often than not a mindset problem. When somebody brings me in, they want me to teach them the magic words of how they're going to close more sales. And I find that people don't use those words. That's why they continue with the same sales problems they've had before the training as after the training, because the minds have never changed. They just never have. And we can talk about what are the proper mindsets in a minute. But so that's one area that I think when I've been guilty of in my 25, 30 years of experience is that I attach every problem to a sales skill solution. And I'm convinced that there is another way to look at it that might be even more useful, might be less expensive than sales training, because that can be expensive.
Yes.
And it might help as well to get the result that you want without trying to change. Because a lot of times we're trying to change behavior. I mean, that's really what sales skills training is. We're trying to teach somebody to not do this and to do this. And we all think, well, behavior change should be easy. I mean, you do it in a golf game. If you have trouble, the pro says, hey, turn your hand over. Or when you're casting, I'm not a fisherman, but I assume there's a proper technique to casting. You got to cast this way. But in sales, it's hard because people have been so ingrained in going to the market in a certain way that they cannot get out of that to pull focus and see another way to do things, which we'll talk about today.
I love that. I think there's one of the biggest traps that a lot of businesses fall into is just doing things the way they've been done just because. So that's awesome. So we're at risk. You started talking golf grip. We're at risk of turning this into a golf episode. So I'll resist that temptation. Yeah. But you mentioned the mindsets. So in kind of the changing from a skill problem to a mindset problem, what do you find is the most common kind of mindset bridge that you need to cross when you're coaching your clients?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the prevailing mindset in a lot of sales organizations. And the prevailing mindset is, what do we need to do to make this sale? What do we need to say? What do we need to do? How do we get it off the street? How do we close the deal? And I think that sets us up for failure, because whenever you, I don't mean you, but as a salesperson goes in and that's all that's on their mind is how am I going to get this thing over the line? How am I going to drag it across the finish line or whatever those tech terms are? I think it screws you up. It screws the relationship up and it causes the prospect. You don't think prospects feel that? You don't think that vibe is obvious? Of course it is. So, and then we bring a sales trainer in, unlike me, but maybe I've done it in the past. And that person is teaching us how to do that even harder and convince harder and persuade harder and make sure the content is right. And I feel like, well, maybe we're not going down the right path there. Maybe the right path is stop selling. Stop this crazy skill of selling and persuasion and convincing. And let's just go talk to people and see if they have problems we can solve. And if they do, we're going to proclaim a solution. And if they don't, we kiss them goodbye, we give them a hug, and we move on. But the national closing percentage today is 15 in business to business. It's 15% of deals proposed to deals closed, 15%. That means we're spending over 80% of our time chasing stuff that's never going to happen. Right. And it has to do with the mindset. Once again, the prevailing mindset is everybody's a prospect. If I could just muster the right words and the right behavior, I can close these people because I'm a closer. And that's just wrong.
Yeah, that reminds me. I mean, we've been through a fundraising process. I've done fundraising several times in addition to founder-led sales, which we'll come back to. But one of my favorite sayings during the fundraising process, which I truly believe is quite literally a sales process, is somebody, one of my mentors told me, ask for money, get advice. Ask for advice, get money. And I think you're right where if you're trying to persuade people or almost like trick people into buying, it's like that's never what they're actually in market for. And I think especially in B2B now, people are savvy enough. They know when they're kind of being lured into something that they don't actually need.
That's right. And we think we can hide it. You know, we think if I just go in and develop a relationship first and then they won't see me coming and then I'll be there. That's just wrong. Here's what I would recommend instead. Just get in your mind that whether a person buys from you or not is irrelevant in the whole scheme of things. You're on this planet for, 80, 100 years. You're going to be talking to a lot of people. Any one deal doesn't matter. What matters is, are you leaving that person better than you found them by offering some thoughts, asking some questions, understanding their plight and their dilemma, sharing a possible solution, and whether they may not buy now, but they may buy eventually because you've built the brand. And again, I'm not suggesting that if a person wants to send you money, you stop them, of course, but it's the whole prevailing mindset that has to change. We have three. I say, number one, you've got to have an abundance mindset. And I know that sounds easy. Well, I got an abundance mindset. No, we usually don't. We have a scarcity mindset. It's usually how we enter most of our relationships, and whether it's dating, whether we need a date or need a wife or need a husband or we need a piece of business, we enter from a scarcity mindset. An abundance mindset is, look, whether this person does business with me or not, it's not going to affect my life that much. I don't care how big the deal is. You may harvest an extra 20 grand in commission check, but okay, that'll be gone in a couple months because you'll find a way to spend that on some new golf clubs or whatever. But abundance is when I'm looking out to the marketplace and I say, my goodness, there are a lot of problems in this marketplace that I could fix. That's the abundance mentality. The second mindset I think we need to shift is, what is our intent? If our intent is a high intent, means it's about them, their dilemmas, their struggles, their vision, what they're trying to accomplish, not ours, sales calls go a whole lot better because people can sniff out when you're just asking questions to fill the air until which time you go into pitch mode. And so high intent is where it's all about them. And the third element is detachment. I always want to detach from outcomes because once I get enslaved for a specific outcome, like a yes, now I'm not honest. I'm not in integrity because I'm doing everything I can to get the yes. And those three things sound simple. They're hard to change because again, we've grown up scarce, low intent, what's in this for me? What can I get out of it? And attached to every last deal. And I think if you can embrace those three, you move through the marketplace with so much more freedom. You're more attractive, not physically, but emotionally to people. And people want to work with you because they say, this Jonathan, he doesn't feel like he really wants my business that bad. Maybe I should take a second look at him, or maybe I trust him more because he's not pitching me all the time, like the last three guys did.
I love detachment. I feel like that typically has such a like negative connotation, but I love the kind of like perspective flip on that of like saying like, no, that's actually a good thing. And what you said, actually, I think at the top, like leaving it better than you found it. Is that person better for the conversation, for the relationship that you've built than they were prior to? I think those are so powerful. So I think that's also a good segue. All those things are difficult to do when times are good. I think the market is making sellers challenge right now, especially difficult. Budgets are shrinking. Teams are shrinking. Deal cycles are lengthening. Close rates are decreasing. Does any of this change as the market changes, or is the whole intent here is that with this mindset shift that that really is transcends kind of up or down markets?
Well, I'll give you the answer that is an unusual answer. Usually the wisdom of low down markets is make more calls. That's usually what we say. Yeah, you got to work harder, got to work longer, got to make more calls, got to be more persistent, can't let anything go. I think that if you look at the typical circle graph and you say that it used to be 100% of our emphasis went into sales training, now I'm suggesting to companies that only spend 25%, a quarter of that time on sales training. You still need it. You still need to know how to conduct yourself. If you're going to, one of my kind of main focuses on changing the buyer-seller dance, change the entire dance so it's not you, the sales organization, not feeling the burden to convince somebody to do business with them. We know what happens then. They resist. And that's why our closing percentage is 15%. So what's the other 75%? We all have enormous assets that are totally under leveraged. Things we don't even think about, things we don't use, maybe a piece of knowledge that we have, maybe it's skills we have, capabilities, stories of clients. Your sales process is an asset. This is an asset. You can record audio and video on this. You can dictate articles on this, but we don't use the assets we have. And so what I'm telling companies now as they head into this potential slowdown, but regardless, even if things were good, I'm saying, stop learning new sales skills, start using the assets that you already have. And when you start talking about that, rather than saying, hey, you need to shoot more videos, nobody does that. Nobody wants to do that because we're all self-conscious. But if I said, look, you've got an asset, you've got a story to tell. Think of all the stories of clients who have used you and they're winning and they're victorious. Why aren't you telling those stories? Those are assets. And so when you go from a skills model to an asset model, it changes the entire game because now you're looking at everything you do and saying, well, how do I get the most value out of a sales call, out of a, you know, face-to-face sales interaction? Can I offer content online that's helpful to people and bringing them along in the journey? Can I do a webinar occasionally where I invite people to it? And we just talk. We talk about some of the issues and I give them some ideas. You have assets you're not using. So I would say that in slower times, you just have to double down on the assets. Your social media platforms are an asset. LinkedIn, it's free unless you're, you know, on the high ticket stuff, but it's free. Why aren't we using LinkedIn? Why aren't we using it more? Most people don't know how to use LinkedIn. They do nothing with it other than they reach out to people to try to book appointments. Not bad, but it's a whole content engine too. And sales professionals, and I'll stop here after this because I feel like I'm on a rant. And this is what you guys do. So I'm talking to the chief guru here, but you know, we know a lot. Salespeople know a lot. And yet that knowledge gets impacted. It just sits dormant inside us. And we don't ever, I don't know whether we're ashamed to share it or whether we feel guilty or feel like, well, I don't know everything. Of course, we don't know everything. But if you're in sales today, you have stories. You have assets that are underused. And so that's my admonition to CEOs, VPs of sales, salespeople, start using your damn assets.
Love that. I think it goes back to what you were saying at the top of this episode is that we get stuck in these habits of these processes and the way things have always been done, and you forget to look around and see what you're not using. So I think that's kind of a great oop to the alley that you led with at the start.
Oop speaking to the of alley. Ooh, I like that. I gotta
yeah,
use it.
You can steal that one. That one's free. First one's free. So speaking of habits that we fall into and maybe refuse to change over time, in the B2B tech space, I think one of the cliches that is being spouted right now is that outbound is dead. In previous career stops, I've led a sales dev or an outbound team. My soapbox, if I'm allowed to pull it out and stand on it, is that I don't think outbound is dead. It is certainly changing. I think a lot of outbound that has been uninspired and lazy in the past is now not working. I think there are better ways, but have you seen any shift in like sales dev or like outbound sales that you think is real? Or is that kind of, again, a cliche that people are spouting right now without much truth behind it?
No, I think there's some truth behind it. I look at things as a mix. I've got a model. Everybody's got a model, right? I got a model called the Lead Parthenon. And the old Greek structures had pillars. They had 4 to 6, 7 pillars in front. And I think that's how lead generation should be for companies. And if you put all your eggs in the outbound basket, one pillar, that's a pillar, but it's not going to carry the entire structure. Mm-hmm. I think outbound calling, cold calling, whatever you want to call it, is good. I think it's fine. I mean, you'll go through a lot of pain to get to the person who wants to talk to you, but if you're doing nothing else, then just sit there and make dials all day. Yeah. The other pillars should be filled with social content, social platforms, maybe digital media like podcasts or YouTube shows or webinars. Another one could be networking. Another one could be strategic alliances. Another one could be email content where you're constantly sending out really good quality content to your email list. But if you get those, it's like a juggler. If you get 6 or 7 of those pillars, those balls in the air, you will never have a problem with lead generation. But if you put all your emphasis on cold calling and all of a sudden people stop answering the phone, which they kind of have in the past 5 to 7 years, you're screwed. What are you going to do next? You're going to run Facebook ads? Tell me how well those work. Now, for some companies, they work. LinkedIn ads. But you've got it all there for you. We tend to look at lead generation through one pillar. That would be my answer to that.
Yeah. Diversify your portfolio.
Absolutely. Right? Your channels of sources of leads. And, you know, to be honest with you, most companies don't. Most companies have 2, should have 7.
It's fascinating. All right. I'm going to maybe not end with, because we'll see if there's some other questions that come up along the way. But I've got 2 self-serving questions here. One is founder-led sales, right? The Juice started founder-led sales, team of one. We've now grown. We have a sales team. I know you oftentimes work with larger clients, but maybe at the smaller scale, how do businesses navigate going from founder-led sales into building a repeatable sales motion that doesn't have the sales hero kind of leading the charge or navigating every deal? What's the process or the mindset shift that it takes for a business to shift from that founder-led sales to building a sales organization?
The mind shift for the founder?
Yeah, for the founder. I would say for the founder and the team coming in that is kind of attaching on to what the founder had built to that point.
I've got a lot of founders that I've worked with who now have sales teams, but they are still what I will call the attractive character. So in your business, you're the attractive character. You're the I'm not suggesting you're attractive, but you're the guy who probably of anybody else in the company knows the story the best. You know the value the best. You know what customers are saying because you have your hand on the pulse of a lot of different areas and situations. You started this thing. You created it from scratch, presumably. So who else better to tell that story than you? But you don't want to be in the sales process either. You don't want to be hammering out cold calls, hopefully. But you might be the character that is the, you know, figurehead for the business that tells those stories in the way that you tell them, that interviews people like you're doing with me and other, I'm sure you interview clients too. That I think is an awesome role for the founder. Then leads come from that. And that's when the salesperson gets involved or the sales team. Some salespeople could be the attractive character, but in most tech companies, it's probably the founder or a high-level person who's the one who's out there with content, with shows, with podcasts, with YouTube videos. And then let the sales team use that in their prospecting efforts. Yeah, when it comes to building a sales team, I just think you have to have first off, teach the mindset. Because if you just teach them how to go out and making calls and don't have that mindset that goes along with it, then they're going to make calls the wrong way. You've got to have your funnels built so that you gradually take people through the funnel. One example in our business is, I know for me to generate corporate clients, making cold calls on a VP of sales just doesn't work. I don't like to do it. They don't like to get them. It's not good. But if I offer, I just wrote a book called 12 Bold Moves. And it's actually not out yet. I will give you the link by the time this goes live. It'll be out. 12 Bold Moves. And I've got a leadership edition. Well, if I direct message people on LinkedIn and say, hey, I just wrote a book. It's 35 pages. It might help you and your team. Free to download. Go download it. Now they download it. They get a series of emails. And when I do that, people then call and say, hey, I like that book. Can we talk about bringing this into our company? So that's a whole lot more elegant to me than pounding out 1,000 cold calls to VP of sales and getting one on the phone.
Right. Provide value up front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teach them. Yeah. So, you know, even if they don't work with you, who cares? They got the book, you know, maybe it'll help their lives. Maybe they'll talk about you on vacation and you'll never know it. But a percentage of those people will say, this is really good stuff. I want to bring these ideas in. And is it 2%? Is it 10%? Doesn't matter, because the point is that now people are calling me wanting to talk about this versus me pounding the pavement.
That's awesome. As I mentioned, that was self-serving. So I was scribbling down some notes. I appreciate that. Like I said at the top, we traditionally talk to marketers on this podcast, but I think good marketing supports sales. The other side of that coin, when you're talking to sales teams, how do you typically coach them through involving or not involving their marketing team?
Here's the way I look at most marketing teams is they are not savvy at the sales process. They do not know what salespeople and customers talk about on calls. Now, should they? Absolutely. Should sales be saying to the marketing team, hey, here is the problems that we're seeking or we're finding here. Please create content or create solutions for that. But a lot of sales teams and marketing teams are divorced. They just don't talk that much. And so I can tell, and you can too, when you get an email from a marketing department, because it doesn't speak to me. It just speaks marketing jargon. Mm-hmm. I was coaching a client today who's a salesperson, and she was in operations. Now she's in sales, really smart lady, and she's struggling to get in front of people. And she had their marketing department create an email that she was going to send out to, you know, 500 prospects. Well, one look at that, I didn't have to read more than one line of that email, and I knew exactly where it came from. It came from the marketing department. It was me, 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 we, I, look at how great we are. If you don't work with us, you're a fool. I said, Tammy, that's not how you talk to people. When you show up, what do you say to people? She goes, well, I tell them, look, I don't know if I can help you. I mean, can we talk to see if there's any value? I said, well, that's what the email should sound like, not a marketing jargon email. And I'm not suggesting all marketing departments do that, but a lot do. So if I'm in the marketing department, I'm listening to this, go to your salespeople, have them call on you, have them make a call on you, record it, transcribe it. There might be some content in there that you can create to help them, because now it comes from them. More people are going to want to use it because it says, well, yeah, that's exactly the kinds of conversations we have. That would be my advice, even though it's probably worthless, but I just think most marketing departments don't have that tone right.
You're exactly right. I'm like fighting the urge to like start shouting right now, because I think that me, we, I think that's like classic, like jargony marketing. I think really good marketing teams, something we talk about a lot of the juices, they know the pain extremely well. And they talk about the pain and they create a visceral emotional reaction to the pain point that your prospects, your audience has. And the salesperson, they are responsible for being the hero to that villain or the painkiller to that pain. But I think so many times, average marketers, bad marketers jump to that solution before even like teeing up the pain point that your prospects and your potential customers have.
I agree with you on the, I'm going to take a little bit of something you said. I'm not sure this whole pain thing is where we start. I know we want to get to the problem. We want the prospect to tell us, look, I've got big problems in my business. I'm hoping you can fix them. Of course, we want to get there. But if you go too quickly to pain, you don't have any rapport. You have to earn your way to pain. And so that's why I think when we market something and we go right to pain, then I think we shut people down. I would rather say, let's tell some stories. Let's tell some stories about some people who had some discomfort, had some circumstances that we helped with. And, but don't talk about it. And I know you're using the word pain as a metaphor for problem that they want solved, but I got to tell you, I've been writing for a while and doing podcast. I just think this pain thing, and I know it's big and it's still big, and you just got to be careful about it. Cause if you go too quickly there, you don't have rapport or trust, you're going to get blown out of the water. And then you won't get any information because they know why you're there. They know why you're asking that question.
Yeah.
I just don't want to show up in a way where everybody knows the game. And the game, typically sales game, has been go in and find the pain. Well, I don't want to start there. I want to get there. I just don't want to start there.
Yeah, I love the story kind of that you mentioned there, like the, and I think you mentioned it in the previous conversation too about the founder being a character in this story. So I think that lens of looking at the sales motion as a story as opposed to a process that we're pushing people
exactly.
through is so powerful.
Exactly. We build these crazy sales processes that have no soul. They have no soul in them at all. And I always say that I've got a program called the $1 Million Seller. And one of the things I do in that is I teach people how to create their sales process. And one of the prerequisites to that is make sure your process has something in it for them, for your prospect. Then they'll follow it. If there's nothing in it for them, A, before you start to insist they follow, you're going to say, well, there's really nothing in it for them. It's just about me shoving people through. Create some soul, create something in it that's like cool or fun, or maybe a document that they get or analysis or a free gift or something in the process. So they say, and I would even suggest salespeople say, look, we've got a process. We take you through. If at the end of this, you don't want to work with us, we're going to give you enough information. You can go out to bid. You can find 10 other people to do it. We think we're pretty good. You may not like us, but at least you'll get something from it. But most sales processes have nothing in it for the customer, nothing.
Well, Bill, I think we just titled this episode, Create Some Soul in Your Sales. I love that. It's human, right? It's human-centric selling. I think it's leading with a story. I think all of that is so, so good. I've learned a lot today. I have a lot more to learn, as does, I'm sure, our audience would love to learn more about you and some of what you're coaching. Bill, if our audience wants to follow you, wants to download the book, what's the best way to follow what you are teaching?
Well, the best way is to go to BillCaskey.com. And there's plenty of links there to podcasts and YouTube videos and the book and some other freebies that we have there. But yeah, I would encourage you to go there, and you can find me on LinkedIn as well at Bill Caskey. Feel free to connect and I'll link back. And then we do a live show every morning at 8:30 on some of these principles. So if you're interested in that, go get on LinkedIn, and there'll be a 10% chance if you're linked to me that you'll see it thanks to the LinkedIn algorithm, but it'll be better than zero.
I love that. Well, Bill, thanks for the time today. I've learned a lot. Any parting thoughts for our audience?
No, Jonathan, I appreciate you having me on. I think these conversations, these deeper conversations, are worth it. I think the idea of every conversation that we have has got to lead to a sale. I just find that to be kind of off-putting, and everybody knows what you're doing. So just chill a little bit. These are human beings who have problems. They have pains. They have kids that, you know, that are not well. They have parents they're trying to take. I mean, we have so many issues in our life. And when we go right to the jugular of sales and don't spend a little time getting to know people, I just think it's not good for anybody.
I love that. That's a good note to end on. All of those links you just mentioned are in the show notes. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And thank you, Bill, for teaching us a little bit along the way.
You're awesome. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.